title of my talk, I'm watching each one of my family members die. Public health functions of families and family dynamics in a slow-motion technological disaster, quotes a resident of Libby, Montana. Libby, Montana is the site, until 1990, of the largest vermiculite mining operation in the U.S. And the great tragedy here is that this vermiculite was contaminated with asbestos. And this laid the groundwork for a slow-motion technological disaster in Libby, Montana. I would like to mention my co-authors, especially Dr. Rebecca Klein and Tanis Hernandez, who are in the audience today, and other members of Carmenis Cancer Institute and the Center for Asbestos-Related Disease, who were instrumental in working on this project. There's been a number of studies that have looked at psychosocial consequences of rapidly striking natural disasters, earthquakes, floods, as well as family-level responses to disease. However, little is known about family responses to slow-motion technological disasters that have serious public health consequences. And so today I'm going to talk about a study that we're conducting looking at how family dynamics mediate public health consequences of slow-motion technological disasters. And I'm going to talk to two points. One, public health functions served by families. And two, social community conditions and family dynamics that impede these functions. Libby is located in the Kootenai Valley. It's an area of idyllic beauty. You would never expect that it was the site of one of the worst ecological disasters in the U.S. It has about 2,800 people, 12,000 people within a 10-mile radius. Between 1919 and 1990, asbestos-contaminated vermiculite was mined from the nearby so-called zonalite mountain mines, about 6 miles outside of Libby. This was the source of 80% of the world's vermiculite product. And it's contaminated with a particularly harmful form of asbestos, which has come to be called Libby amphibole asbestos. Now, the risk factors associated with exposure to this asbestos are not confined to Libby. There are probably, there's probably a processing plant near you, in a community near you, that dealt with this material. And there are millions of homes that contain insulation made from vermiculite from Libby. Now, most of you are probably fairly familiar with health consequences of asbestos exposure. Asbestosis, mesothelioma, lung cancer, pleural plaques, ultimately all of these diseases are fatal. And it's been also linked to gastrointestinal cancers, autoimmune disorders, but more research is needed in this area. Now, I want to take just a moment to talk about exposure pathways in Libby, because I think they show how important the family unit is to the experience of the health disaster in Libby. There are two major forms of exposure, one occupational and the other domestic, as well as exposure to asbestos through the ambient air in Libby. And exposure often happened due to interdependencies in families. So if one family member worked in, say, the mine or in the timber industry, where, by the way, people were exposed to asbestos because the asbestos fibers fell into and became embedded in the bark of the trees, and then people who worked in the lumber industry were exposed. So if you have a father who works in the mine, for example, he is likely to bring home dust that's contaminated with asbestos on his clothing, in his vehicle, resulting in exposure for the rest of the family. The exposure pathways often align themselves along traditional gender roles. So men were exposed at work and women exposed through domestic activities such as laundering their husband's clothing. Children, for example, were exposed because some of the very fundamental functions of family, providing shelter, providing food, led to asbestos exposure. Probably most of the homes in Libby were contaminated with asbestos through the insulation that was used in the homes. In addition, vermiculite was used as a common soil filler, and so through gardening, people were exposed to asbestos. In addition, many of the sports facilities in Libby were built with contaminated construction materials, so even family leisure time activities resulted in exposure. So I just say this to emphasize the family nature of this disaster. Now let me briefly talk about the study. We conducted a number of focus groups in Libby, people who had lived in or worked in and around Libby for the past 5 years. They were recruited with help from the Center for Asbestos-Related Disease. And we had 9 focus groups. They were relatively homogeneous because Dr. Klein had the foresight to set up criteria such as, did people have ARD, an ARD diagnosis, or asbestos-related disease diagnosis or not? Did they have a family member with asbestos-related disease or not? And people were grouped into focus groups on this basis. Of course, the focus groups were video recorded. They were moderated by a clinical social worker. And here's a typical setup of our focus groups. The sample, no surprises here, 66 participants in focus groups, about half female, fairly average education for the area, nearly all Caucasian, and older on average, 61 to 65 is the median age. Of course, following the focus groups, the audio tapes were transcribed. We took the transcriptions, divided them into thought units, and are conducting thematic analyses, and I'll be talking about these major themes today. Now, it's important to note that we didn't really set out to look at the family unit and its role in the experience of the disaster. These are our discussion focus groups topics, and you can see that really only one of the questions specifically addresses family. But what became quickly apparent was that the family unit was probably one of the most important social units for people's experience and experience or mediating people's experience of the disaster. One of our participants came out and called it a family thing. Once you've lost one, two, multiple family members, this has a devastating impact on the family unit. And so today I want to turn to talking about how families respond to and cope to the disaster. And my thesis is that families play very important social public health functions. And this is in part due to the fact that, as in most disasters, needs outstrip the availability of formal resources. And families step in and fill this gap. And so this leads, one of the implications is that families are left interdependent, and the extent to which families adapt to these challenges can influence family members' well-being and health. And so one of the family functions for people take on is caregiving. This is probably the most obvious. It can be health-related, such as the first woman who every night she checks to make sure that her husband has turned on his oxygen machine. Or they can be non-health-related because asbestos-related disease, or ARD, is associated with a great deal of disability, and ultimately people are unable to do basic household tasks that allow them to live independently. So families step in and do the cleaning. Many of the homes in Libby are heated with wood, and so people need to chop the wood and bring the wood in. Also, most of our participants talked about shortfalls in terms of health care coverage, and family members are stepping in and filling this gap. They are covering these costs out of their pocket. One of the ways that family members have had a perhaps distal but extremely important influence on the health and well-being of people with ARD in Libby is advocacy. It's taken tremendous community involvement in order to bring this issue to light, in order to get the EPA in to start the cleanup, also to advocate for compensation for victims. Finally, social influence is endemic to families, and so family members can have an impact on people's health behaviors. And this can involve, for example, promoting screening for asbestos-related disease in your family members. Also, especially in the past, limiting exposure, for example, to children who might be playing in the yard that might be contaminated with asbestos. Standing up to family members that might be a little bit more skeptical about the risks and making sure they're reducing their exposures. Now let me turn to talking about barriers to family promotion of health. Because obviously these are what we want to be paying attention to when we're thinking about interventions and policy change. So perhaps one of the most important is financial barriers. Most of these barriers, I would say, have their root in the community and social dynamics in Libby. So for example, after the closure of the mine and then subsequently the closure of the timber industry, this had an enormous economic impact on families in Libby. And so people were left without jobs. And this is a barrier, of course, to enhancing the quality of life as well as medical care age-related disease. Especially early on, the medical community could be said to have failed people with ART in Libby. They were often delayed, incorrect, or a simple lack of diagnosis of those people who had asbestos-related disease symptoms. People were told, well, there's nothing wrong with you, and they were told this by doctors. They were told that your symptoms are related to smoking, for example, rather than asbestos exposure. And so this is a barrier to families being able to advocate for the most appropriate and best health care for their families members. And of course, whether social influence is going to be resistance to social influence. However, in Libby, I think we can say that some of this resistance has its origins in community dynamics. And so, for example, yesterday Dr. Klein talked a lot about stigma, the stigmatization of people with ART, which becomes a barrier to wanting to get screened and identifying yourself as ART, and even to wearing the markers that would identify you as having ART, in other words, wearing an oxygen tank, for example. So this is a barrier to receiving the best medical care. Also, there are some community or some social values in Libby that may stand in the way of following the treatment regimen. So people and following advice from family members. This is independence and evaluating of personal strength. Perhaps one of the most toxic is family conflict over the nature and legitimacy of the health disaster. Now, this is not uncommon in a technological disaster to find that the community erupts in conflict. There's a lot of disagreement about the nature of the disaster, the legitimacy of the health claims of those people who are ill. And this finds its way into families as well. So families get torn apart in many instances over the issue of whether a person who's claiming to have asbestos-related disease is just a money grubber or not, trying to get compensation and doesn't have a legitimate disease. You see this, and of course, this conflict is going to be a barrier to providing resources and social support to these family members who need it. A related barrier is silence and secrecy in families. So sometimes this silence comes about because people are trying to avoid outright conflict within families, but also because some family members will try to protect others, try to not be a burden on their family members. But what this does is opens the door to family members not being aware of the true needs of people with asbestos-related disease and not being able to provide that support. The last set of barriers that I want to talk about are family structure barriers. And again, this goes back to community dynamics in Libby. So geographical distance has become a significant barrier because it limits the kind of social supportive ties that people can have. And in part, this is due to people having to move away from Libby in order to find employment. And oftentimes, this is, of course, the younger generation. And so the absence of these close ties can result in lack of social support. Related note is just the loss of family supportive ties through other members being ill with asbestos-related disease. Oftentimes, there are multiple family members who are suffering from or have died from the disease. So premature death and illness of relatives becomes a significant barrier to potential support. And I would like to just read this quote from this person. I think she just captured it perfectly. She said, and it's just one family member after another I've lost. I'm on my fifth. And you just kind of wonder, when's my turn? Who's going to have to take care of me? In other words, who's going to be left to take care of me? So in summary, I wanted to make two points. That families are a vital source of support and resources to those with asbestos-related disease. They serve public health functions. But there are also significant barriers facing these families. These are economic, there are healthcare failures, stigmatization of people with ART, cultural beliefs, conflict within families, and erosion of family ties. And when we're thinking about interventions and policy responses to slow motion technological disasters, we would like to be thinking about reducing or compensating for these barriers in order to support family coping responses.